there, everybody. This is Armand Demel with you, with the positive mind, here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, guests, and exciting co-hosts, engineers, youth, beauty, help you lead a more positively minded life. In this very studio today, we have family. Julian Joiello, also chief engineer, also co-host, and Ben Starr, also co-hosting and engineering with us. Brilliant young man, joined us recently. And Linda Vanella, the indefatigable Linda Vanella. That means you don't get tired, Linda. Welcome back, guys. Good. This is interesting today.
Hey there.
Good to be here.
The idea today, we're exploring something very interesting. Today we're going to look at ADHD. It starts this way. It starts off with my suspecting that many more adults have a condition called ADHD than is recognized. There are questions I have about how it connects to Alzheimer's, how it connects to infidelity. There are things we're going to get to a little later. But let's start off this with the professionals. Linda, you've worked with children with ADHD. Let's go on for a definition of what is ADHD as it describes children.
I'm on attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, is a mental health condition that affects many, many children. It also affects adults and is then called adult ADHD.
Let's stick with the children for now.
Okay. In childhood, there are many times when children will exhibit a number of symptoms. Anxiety, inability to sit still, chronic boredom, difficulty concentrating, chronic forgetfulness, impulsiveness, mood swings, poor organizational skills, among a few others, poor organizational skills, relationship problems, and depression. And these symptoms come together in what we call a mental health condition that oftentimes exhibits itself in childhood.
So let's take a look at that. Children, Linda, you're saying children will show a lot of anxiety, nervousness. Mm-hmm. Now, aren't children always nervous?
They are. I wouldn't say that they're always nervous, but there are times when a child will seem like they're sort of driven by a motor.
Okay.
They exhibit something more than an anxiety.
It's almost like they're out of control.
Yes, they always seem to be on the go.
But isn't every baby like that, like, you know, like a terrible two or something like that?
No, Armand. We'll have, at age two, we'll have the typical, as you say, terrible two, the time when a child will consistently say no to things. But this is a more excessive kind of thing, where the child will have outbursts of anger, seems to be almost consistently saying no, 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 and will exhibit a kind of feeling of impatient. Of course, a two-year-old
child.
Now,
you've worked in the hospital with this?
Yes, of course.
And in the hospital, when you work with it, you've had family coming in saying, here's my kid, she can't sit still.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so you look at it, and as a professional, you say, it's ADHD. That's what you say to yourself.
Yes. Well, that with other kinds of symptoms, we would look at, what other kinds of symptoms could we see?
So you're looking at the difficulty concentrating, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And the forgetfulness, the child forgets, and mood swings, and impulsiveness, and relationship. Well, if you're a child, you must have difficulty even making friends with ADHD.
Well, yes. Again, depending upon the age of the child, a very young child, you won't look for a two-year-old making friends. But as a child becomes 5, 6, or 7, you will see that the child is having difficulty having a one-on-one relationship that seems to be running smoothly because of the excessive anger, this excessive outburst, the lack of patience. And as I say, in sort of negotiating, if I look at young children at 4 or 5 and I see that it's difficult for them to sort of negotiate with another child, whether it's sharing a toy or playing a game.
This is important stuff, my friends. It sounds like we're talking about a childhood disorder that only affects 1 out of 20 children. However, we're going to take this into adulthood, and we're going to see ways of understanding adulthood that you've never been able to see before. So we're starting it off with this description of what it's like to treat them. Now, Linda, in working in the hospitals, you've treated this condition, working with family therapy, you've treated this condition. When we say treat this condition, that means somehow you move through the hyperactivity to get to a more stable place. Is that what treating it is?
Yes, yes. It's really trying to help, whether it's a child in a family setting or an adult. You're trying to get the ability of the patient to become aware and understanding of the condition, and then, of course, treat it with behaviors and other options, be it medication and or therapy, but ways that can help the child or the adult maneuver this, negotiate.
Okay, can we see if we can make this very specific? What do you do?
What do you do?
You got somebody comes in, they've got a hyperactive child, the child's 6 years old. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do, offer the kid insight?
No, you bring in the family, of course. You do some assessment, looking at all of these traits, and then you educate the family, of course, and help them to be understanding of what the symptoms and what
okay,
these
so conditions
are.
Okay, so you tell the family, look, you got a kid who's got a thing, and this thing makes them buzz inside more than other children. So their forgetfulness is not necessarily meant to just irritate you. The fact that the kid leaves the keys at home, right, this is not meant against you. This is just something that your child is going to do because they have more energy running around than most children do. Now, this very energy may lead them to do some creative genius. Like, I imagine Robin Williams had ADHD. I guarantee it as a kid. And it may turn into later some kind of creative genius. Or it may turn into a manic disorder later. So this is what you could do with a family. Now, in addition to that experience, you were also a parent of 4 children. Did any of your children ever have ADHD specifically?
Yes, Armand. I have 1 of my 4 that was very clearly exhibited all of these symptoms at a very young age. I would say at 2 or 3, I started to see that there were differences. Although he was young, there seemed to be an inability to be able to sit. Unlike the 2 children that came before him, he had interests that were much more physical rather than being able to sit and pay attention to a story or reading. His speech was a bit different. His patience, but his feelings of wanting to kind of explore and discover on a physical level were much more different than his other brothers and sister. So I was able to see young that he had something going on there that needed to be given some extra attention.
So when he went to school and he didn't do as well in school.
Well, what I did was, when he went into school, I elected to keep him back a year for fear that, concern that he wouldn't be able to maintain himself in a seated kind of conventional classroom. So giving him physical activities, music, and other sensory activities, I felt would be much more conducive.
You held him back a year, and
I did.
That was effective?
I feel it was.
Sounds pretty smart.
Yes.
As opposed to what they would have done when I was a kid, which is hit the kid. And he'll straighten out. Right.
Well, that's the reason why many times you'll have ADHD children becoming juvenile delinquents and having conduct disorders. That's exactly what usually happens. You'll jump on the child when there is a lack of awareness or understanding or education to the family. The family sees this child as an acting out child. He's a terrible two. He's a discipline problem. And so what happens then is you have a child with ADHD that winds up having some other kind of conduct disorder.
So the kid has something that we couldn't even say it's a disease or an ailment. He's got some personality alignment that makes him more active in his brain, he or she, than others. And with this extra activity, their mind is buzzing and they can't line things up normally. So when you see it, you have to, like you as a pro would appreciate it, and you'd say, okay, if things are moving faster in your world than they are in my world, let me speed up the world. Or let me take you into my world. Let me slow the world down for you, which is what you did. Now Ben, though, we heard a few minutes ago from Ben, who actually lived through this. Ben, give us a little bit about yours.
Well, I was diagnosed around 10 or 11 with ADHD and spent the next few years medicated on a variety of different types of medicine, Ritalin, Adderall, pretty much every type that they had at the time.
Interesting thing. Let me ask you about Ritalin and Adderall. One would not expect, if you had somebody who had hyperactivity, that you would give them something like Ritalin because it's speed.
It's amphetamine.
So why would that work? Well, it actually does. The way it works, I'm not recommending it as a treatment, but the way it works is if somebody has a speed that's out of control, if you give them more speed, they sometimes get in control. It's like a car. It's like you're driving a car, and if the car is a little out of control, it's swerving, you step on the gas, and it goes straighter.
Right. I remember you saying that about Robin Williams, right. With his some of his experiences with drugs and manic.
And that was right. It would move him along faster.
Right.
So they would give you those medications.
They did. And in the end, I'm not sure that it did help or that it did work. There were times where I was doing better in school, and there were times where I felt like the medication wasn't really agreeing with me physiologically. It would affect my appetite, and it would affect some of my thoughts. But I do understand why some people use it as treatment. It just wasn't really for me. And
so a lot of people think that the ADHD definition is there primarily so that the drug companies could sell drugs. We're going beyond that today. We're talking not about recommended medications. And I can't really say medications are wrong. I don't think they're right. I prefer not to have them around. But Ben's telling us his story of what it was like. Now, Ben, when you were going through this, did they make you wrong for being this way?
I don't know if there was an explicit message that I was wrong, but, when you're young and you're being taken to see doctors and being told, that you need to take this, there is an implicit message that something is wrong somehow.
Right. They're saying this is normal and we want to get you there.
Right. I mean, no one ever explicitly told me that I was bad or wrong, but the implied message is there.
Well, I don't know. In the church, in Catholic Church, if you couldn't sit still, you were wrong. You were bad. You were possessed by the devil. I mean, it was really a heavy judgment. You didn't get that.
Nothing like that, no.
Okay, now, you were saying the medications, they tried medications. Did anything else make a difference to you? Was there a counselor? Was there a person? Was there a crossover? What about when you crossed over into adolescence? What about when your hormones took into effect?
Well, definitely when I got to the age where I was more comfortable around women and more comfortable talking to women, that was something that was very easy to focus on because it was motivating. And another thing that I think a lot of people use were video games. In those years, I played a lot of video games.
Huh.
And the reason I think that video games work for some people is because there's an instant gratification that happens. There are clear-cut goals that you can accomplish relatively quickly, and they result in concrete rewards. Whereas life isn't exactly like that. Life is more of a marathon, where you're not necessarily going to see the fruits of your labor immediately. Sometimes it takes years of working towards something to reap the rewards of it.
So having the video games is like being a womanizer. You get the satisfaction after satisfaction after satisfaction, but it doesn't necessarily take away the repetition of the symptoms.
No, it's a distraction, and it's a distraction that feels rewarding because it is rewarding in a virtual sense. There's no real life takeaway, but there are virtual rewards that happen that I think trigger some of the dopamine responses in the brain.
So, Ben, my question to you is, did it hurt to be that way?
It did hurt at times. I mean, there were times where you mentioned the mind buzzing. And, you know, there were times later on in my life where I had turned to certain substances to sort of shut the noise off in my brain. And that was the first thing I thought of when you mentioned the mind buzzing, was that you can have a very high level of activity and thoughts to the point where you could be laying in bed wide awake, just all these thoughts racing through your brain.
I think people with hyperactivity disorders tend to self-medicate. It just makes so much sense.
It does.
But, I mean, self-medicating could be doing nutrition, too. I mean, just eating wheatgrass is self-medicating.
Or eating non-nutritional foods like fatty or sweet foods.
As well, both.
Do the ADHD type, do they often search for stimulation just in general?
Well, now we're talking about type, and we want to be able to cross over here now from child to adult. Let's stick with child for a minute, Linda.
Well, before we go into child, I just wanted to say, would looking for stimulants address the chronic boredom that people with ADHD have?
Sure, because what is that boredom? The boredom is it's random energy. It has no place to go. You're sitting with this buzz going on inside you. And again, just like with fuel, just like stepping on the pedal. Add a drug to it, add some speed to it, add some coffee to it, you know, and start to moderate. And think about what we could do with medications. We could have coffee, wheatgrass, right, and cigarettes. And we could, through that, completely moderate most of your dominant chemicals. If you think about it, just think about what we could do between food, sugar, right, caffeine, right, nicotine.
Right, these then things are giving you the control over your body.
Aspirin, right, and then we could take tranquilizers, right, and things like that, and the one-a-day things. So all of these give you the control, which are kind of indicating that you have an out-of-control sense, which is, could be what boredom is. So in back with your children, I just wanted to ask you, did you ever find one thing, Linda, with children that emotionally happened that made all the difference? Is there ever a point that you hug a child and the child allows you to hug them, and it all melts away?
For sure. Yes. Yes. I consistently see that one great big bear hug oftentimes will give that child a stopping of the buzz. The buzz will stop. They'll feel safe. They'll feel secure. They'll feel that they have limitations and that the boundaries give them a safe haven. So, yes, I do feel that more often than not, on an emotional level, when I'm treating a child, that feeling of security, that feeling of home and safety will certainly allow that child to breathe. Because I think, as Ben so eloquently described, I think it's that buzz that when adults or others who are trying to serve a child and not understanding what that means and how that's interpreted, could understand that as being rebellious, can see that as being an anger, can see it as being a disposition problem, and not so much an understanding of what's really occurring in the mind of that child.
Well, you know, there's a part of magic that I've watched you do. I know Linda runs women's groups, and she has a special relationship with women. And what I've seen through the office or just through a door is when you hold a woman, when you hug someone, their world stops. They pause. they welcome you because you offer them that sanctuary. It's a beautiful thing.
Thank you.
And I think most of us have learned how to do that. You know, it's a beautiful thing. It's like that hug without stimulation. A lot of people hug other people, and what they do is they stroke their backs or they massage their backs and they keep activity going. That's not the one that counts. The one that counts is the one where you could say to somebody, you are safe, I'm holding you, we are secure together. It's a beautiful thing. So let's move this conversation to where we were going to take it today. We're talking about the adult ADHD. Adult, how do you know that you have this adult ADHD? Now, there are things that only a person with ADHD would understand. There's a way that you feel with the words in your mind. The feeling that you might explode if you don't let the words come out of your mouth, all of the words right now. So an adult person with adult attention deficit disorder would have they must speak. They have to get the words out. With an exception. Now, you had an exception, right, Linda?
Yes, there was an exception to that, and there always is. But with one that I'm speaking about, we had the child who was clearly ADHD, but he had a lack of speaking. He was not able to speak. He was very slow in his developmental speech. And that was an interesting symptom that we looked at. But yes, there are some exceptions to these.
So part of the thing about having adult ADHD is it's hard to keep track of conversations because the conversation, your brain is already flooded two sentences in. The blank space appears in your mind when you're asked a question. Like they said, it has a sound, like somebody asks you a question, what do you do with this? And your mind is moving so fast you can't answer the question. Coworkers kindly point out stray post-its that you have. You put post-its everywhere. You're always putting reminders up. This is a sign that you may be suffering with ADHD. Usually there are employment problems. Very hard to follow. You know, to follow the instructions of somebody else. What kind of relationship problems are there, Linda?
Well, there's also a constant irritation with social problems, a need for control, a need of feeling intimidated, a fear that they're going to be leaving them. So there's a feeling that is like unrest.
Oh, you said something real big.
Mm-hmm.
You see, now, if you have attention deficit disorder, there is a feeling that you could be left floating in space. So what you do is you hold on and you try to control. And it's a control thing that takes place. So you also have poor organizational skills. You tell somebody, put this together, we're going to do a radio show, make a list, right? And you can't kind of put it in order. You can only do, you put down random things, but you can't put it down. Another thing that happens is selective attention. I talked to a boy the other day, a young boy, and he said, my mother, whenever we go out, my mother will be walking with me, and she suddenly will turn and talk to somebody else. He said, and she does it all the time. And I'm standing there, going crazy. And he said to me, he's a young boy. He was like, how old is Joey? 10 years old. 10 years old, he said to me, I hate when she does that. I never heard him say a harsh word in his life. He said, I hate when she leaves me standing there and she goes off and has a conversation as if I don't exist. And I thought about that feeling. What's that feeling like? What's it like to suddenly be stranded in space? Not for everyone, because for many people that's okay. But for some people, because they're moving and they're so dependent on this other person at the moment and the exchange with the other person, that when you sever that conversation, when you sever that connection, they're lost. So to some people, it's a danger. It feels horrible. To other people, it feels perfectly normal.
I think in that regard, you see a lack of flexibility. You get the sense that there's a rigidity. The anxiety, the buzz, creates a need for that child to have a very...
Well, we're talking adults now, not child anymore.
I'm sorry, as well as adult. The adult has to know, as you say, organization, they have to know that everything is going to go one step at a time. So whether it's that 10-year-old child or whether it's the adult, we have this feeling of lack of flexibility. At the moment, it's rigid. You hold on.
You know, it really feels that way. You know, it feels that way. You're suddenly talking and suddenly somebody comes up and takes the conversation away. And do you ever have that experience, Ben?
Sure, all the time.
Tell me about it.
Well, just thinking back to what you said about how your mind is moving so fast that someone could ask you a question and you're still sort of 5 minutes behind or 5 minutes ahead. That's definitely something that I've experienced.
Something that I feel like I've noticed, a question for you then. When I have to make an active choice to listen to somebody and go kind of out of my way to focus, is that a symptom of this? Because
Sure, it makes sense that your mind is running into a number of places, number one. Or it could be that it's your mind that can't catch up, or it's their mind is so disorganized. Sometimes you listen to people and you've got to organize what they're saying.
I've experienced that. I mean, there's been times where I am in a conversation and I realize I have no idea what this person just said.
Right, it's like a chain that's just kind of broken.
Yeah, and you miss one link and then suddenly you're trying to remember what they've been saying for the last 3 minutes.
You know what people do with people like that? I know therapists who talk like that. They talk so randomly that they just keep talking and talking and talking, and the patient has no idea what they're talking about. The patient sits there and waits because they're assuming that any minute now I'm going to get what they're talking about. So they sit and they wait for a catchphrase. And finally, when the therapist says something like, "And then I bought the red one," and the patient will say, "Yes, the red one, I love red things." And it's as if the entire conversation made sense. But many therapists run on like this because they have a captive audience. And patients don't have any idea what they're talking about. Very often wonder, you know, what did your therapist just say? Well, I'm not really sure, but I got the idea. Because very often it's just about being there that makes the difference.
And oftentimes just being there is very difficult for an adult or a child with ADHD. It's that very essence of being present that is very, very, very difficult. And to me, that's the most obvious sign. Whether I call it in childhood, a child who cannot negotiate with others, or in adulthood, a parent, a family, or an adult male or a female who cannot be present, whether it's in relationship or at jobs.
We're going to continue with this. Thank you, Linda. We're going to continue with this in a few minutes. I mean, how many times have you lost your eyeglasses? How many times have you left your refrigerator in your purse in the refrigerator? You know, when you have to look for it. Where is your wallet? Hyperventilating when you look at a calendar because you never get a calendar straight. Calendars are the enemy of the person with attention deficit disorder. They just can't stand it. They don't do it. I luckily, with my own calendar, I've got all the help in the world because Jamie just keeps sending me variations therein. But you may not be as lucky as I am because it's very hard to keep a calendar if other people are depending on it. So calendars become a problem. People show up when they're not supposed to show up, and people don't show up when they're supposed to show up. And it's even choosing clothes. Choosing clothing could take you 45 minutes to pick the same pair of black socks. Or sometimes you get these inexplicable urges to ride your bike around the neighborhood at midnight. Or cleaning out your wallet and finding receipts from 1998, the last time you cleaned out your wallet. Waking up at 6 o'clock, getting out of bed and screaming, "Hey, you guys mind if I vacuum?" You know, suddenly having this impulse to take care of things. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind. We will be taking your calls. Linda Vanella, Ben Starr, Julian Joiello. We will be back with you in just a few minutes after a little music, and then we'll take your telephone calls at 212-957-2729. We'll be right back.
Was queen of the mambo, papa was king of the Congo. Deep down in the jungle, I stopped banging mother's bongo. Every monkey like to be in my place instead of me, cause I'm the king of bongo, baby, I'm the king of bongo bong. I went to the big town where there is a lot of sound, from the jungle to the city, looking for a bigger crowd. So I play my bongo for the people of big city. They don't go crazy when I'm banging on my boogie. I'm the king of the bongo, king of the bongo bong. Hear me when I come, baby. King of the bongo, king of the bongo bong. Hear me when I come. They say that I'm a clown, making too much dirty sound. They say there is no place for little monkey in big town. Nobody like to be in my place instead of me, cause nobody go crazy when I'm banging on my boogie. I'm the king of the bongo, king of the bongo bong. Hear me when I come, baby. King of the bongo, king of the bongo bong. Hear me when I come. Banging on my bongo, all that swing belongs to me. I'm so happy there's nobody in my place instead of me. I'm a king without a crown, hanging loose in a big town. But I'm the king of bongo, baby, I'm the king of bongo bong. King of the bongo, king of the bongo bong. Hear me when I come, baby. King of the bongo, king of the bongo bong. Hear me when I come. Mama was queen of the mambo, papa was king of the Congo. Deep down in the jungle started banging my first bongo. Every monkey like to be in my place instead of me, cause I'm the king of bongo, baby, I'm the king of bongo bong. I went big town where there is a lot of sound, from the jungle to the city, looking for a bigger crowd. So I play my bongo for the people of big city. They don't go crazy when I'm banging on my boogie. I'm the king of the bongo, king of the bongo bong. Hear me when I come, baby. King of the bongo, king of the bongo bong. Hear me when I come. King of the bongo, king of the bongo bong. Hear me when I come, baby. King of the bongo, king of the bongo bong. Hear me when I come.
Je ne t'aime plus, mon amour. Je ne t'aime plus, tous les jours. Je ne t'aime plus, mon amour. Je ne t'aime plus, tous les jours. Je ne t'aime plus, mon amour.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. We're talking about being king of the jungle. We're talking about, you know, talk about being king of the jungle. Ben developed a character as a child to deal with this ADHD that he had as a child. Who was your character?
Well, I got kind of rowdy as I grew up, you know, as I went from grade school to middle school and into high school. I just wanted to prove myself to a lot of people. And so I did that either by getting in trouble inside or outside of school, getting into fights, sometimes fights with teachers, sometimes physical fights with other students. And
so you became a wild child.
Yeah, I became.
Now, what's the advantage of the wild child? The wild child is people are afraid of it. They stand back from it.
Right.
They don't try to expect you to be normal because you're a wild child.
And then some of the respect that I felt that I might have been missing earlier, I started to see in people's faces. So even if it was a grudging respect or a fearful or whatever kind of respect, I felt like people at least saw me as some kind of entity.
They say that with drug addiction and alcohol addiction, there's a primary rule. The primary rule of being an addict is to lie, is deception. The idea of being an addict is that you must deceive everybody so that you could keep your addiction going because they would take it away. So whenever you meet somebody who is an addict, even as a therapist, you expect they're going to lie to me. This person is lying to me right now as they sit here right now. They're going to not tell me the truth. If they're alcoholic, they're not telling me the truth, even if you're the hired therapist. One of the things you expect when somebody has a defiant disorder is you can expect attention deficit, because the defiance is the same as the lying is for the drug addict. It's your protection. Defy keeps it away from you, because on some level, you know, it feels terrible to have ADHD. It's terrible not to be able to focus. I've seen some of the pain of it personally. You've known some of the pain of it, haven't you, Linda?
Yes, I've seen it on many levels.
How about in your own feeling, in about
my
yourself?
Own, yes. I was telling you earlier today that when I went into college, my first year I took anatomy and physiology at Molloy College, and I knew that I had some kind of learning problem, but I was always able to camouflage or deal with it. But when I went into college and I realized that I was with a group of wonderful students that all could seem to be passing these exams and doing well in the labs, but I was struggling so. And then I realized, oh my, I'm going to have to work that much harder because I definitely have a deficiency here. There's something that's keeping me, holding me back from being able to learn as well as I would like to.
I remember as a kid, there were parts of, I excelled in certain things and there were other things I just couldn't do. And I remember how inadequate I felt. I felt like I was a broken toy. Which brings me to the idea that attention deficit disorder goes along with a lot of shame. Shame, feeling inferior, feeling broken, feeling like something is wrong with you. Because everybody else seems to be able to toe the mark, but you can't. Are you aware of that shame, Ben? Do you remember feeling it at all?
Absolutely. You know, at various points. And really quick, I just want to tie something back to what you said earlier about how there's a lot of self-medicating that happens. I think that that can be another source of the shame. But at the same time, I don't think that it's necessarily universally wrong. And as an example, I'll just say that in a lot of rehab programs and 12-step programs, people are getting sober, but they're sitting around drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes.
All right, and eating donuts.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's a way of balancing. We've got a caller on the line, John. Hi, this is Armand Demilia with us.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about my attention deficit disorder.
Yes, go ahead, John. And if you could, try to stay. Maybe this is a funny thing to say. Try to stay in one spot because you're on a cell phone, and I'm hearing it fade in and out.
Hold on a second.
Much better.
I've been dealing with this since I was a kid, you know. I've been growing up with it, and it's really been tough. I don't really know what to do, you know, just living with it.
And how have you suffered by it, John? What's been the consequences?
I've been ridiculed by my peers, mm-hmm. You know, learning different, being different, you know. Just a whole slew of things, and just been tough.
Now in your life, John, have you ever said, there's something wrong with me, I can't seem to pay attention the way everybody else does, let me see a doctor? You ever done that?
I have thought that.
And you've thought it, but did you ever do it?
No.
Okay. You see, I think there's a reason why we don't do it. I think if an animal feels like it's caged and it's running around, like if I feel like I'm got too much activity, I'm afraid that they're going to restrict me. I'm afraid they're going to take away the only thing I have, which could be they're going to curb my ability to get out of this. But it would be not a bit at this point, you know, maybe you've been right up until now, John, but at this point, maybe consulting with somebody would make all the difference, because it could be just simple conversation that helps fix it for you. And I'm talking about talking with somebody like Linda Vanelli, you know, or somebody who understands this.
Yeah, the only person that really understands this is my mother, and I only get to see her a few times a year. She lives down in Florida, so, you know.
So in a way, she's the only one. Therefore, you have no other relationships. You have no lovers.
No.
Yeah, sounds like that life. So in a way, you're being loyal to your mom by not getting any help.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there's something about that that's worthy of question. Maybe maybe it's time to say, Mom, thank you very much for your help, but I've got to go on and live my life.
Right, exactly.
I bet your father wasn't around when you were a kid.
Excuse me?
Where was your father when you were a child?
My dad, he left me at a young age.
That's about
11 or 12.
And so you wound up being your mother's husband, in effect.
Yeah, in a way. Because I had no siblings. I was an only child growing up with this.
Mm-hmm.
It's been tough, you know?
Of course it's tough. So married to your mom, just in a way, you know, being there to fill the spot for your dad, kind of leaves you restricted.
Right.
And maybe it was necessary for the time being, but that was a long time ago. And
yeah,
it may
right.
be time for you to claim your own space.
Right.
So I would say, Breck, I strongly recommend you find someone to talk to at this point. They won't take your mother away from you, and they won't take away your energy. But you'll find just by being with someone, you'll soften
right.
up a bit, and all
so
of this will soften.
You think I should see like a therapist?
Yes, I think
something?
A therapist. Yes, not a medication, from what you're saying.
You think I should see like a therapist or
yes.
something?
Yes, I think so. I think all that right. makes a lot of sense. Send me an email. I'll guide you to somebody.
All right.
All right. Thank you so much for calling, John.
Thank you.
You could hear how he suffers with it, but now that brings up an interesting concept. If you have a hyperactivity disorder, who does it most connect you to in your family? Interesting thought. Who is most likely to stay connected to you in a protective way if you have this hyperactivity disorder? And that's an interesting question. Go ahead, Ben. Give me a shot.
Well, my first instinct was who else in your family is most like you?
Well, instead of that, but who loved you with your hyperactivity disorder? Which, your mom or your dad?
I'd say both. I mean, my mom was probably more involved in it, so.
So there's a connection between you and her around this ailment.
Yeah.
Around this thing. What about you, Linda?
I would say the attachment that I had as a child.
What made you feel safe?
My father.
Sure. Sure. What about you, Julian?
I mean, I was only my father who raised us, so definitely my father.
Yeah.
It made me very close because he was that person who supported
so
me.
So it's highly possible that the reason, according to what we just heard from John, that the symptom persists is it's a form of dependency on the relationship with the parent. Interesting concept, don't you think? It's a way of holding on. And that's all right. You hold on as long as you got to hold on, and you let go when you're ready to let go. This is Armand DeMille. Our telephone number here is 212-957-2729. 917-2729. Paying the kids to do housework chores would be a great idea, except that they can't pay attention. So when you have an attention deficit disorder, as an adult, it's hard to even organize getting other people to do things for you. Did you have any reaction to what I just said, Ben, about the dependency?
Yeah, I also think maybe it's a way of staying young. What I mean by that is keeping that childlike childhood mentality and holding on to that. Because as we get older, there's less and less room for that in most people's lives. And we all want to, I think deep down, most of us do want to stay connected to our so-called inner child or the childlike feelings that we once had.
I clearly had this kind of thing when I was a child, except there was nobody there who would have nurtured me through it. So I had to develop the other style. And the other style, therefore, I mean, I resented it. It says, Jesus, I got to be in charge. I didn't have a right to childhood anymore. And so there's some part of me that's always fighting to get that childhood back. Let's get Ivan on the line. Hi, Ivan. This is Armand DeMille. You're on the phone.
Hi, Dr. DeMille.
How are you?
As I was a kid, I was always had problems like focusing, you know, even in school. And come to find out, I was like a really creative child. I used like to draw and whatnot. Now, as I got older, now, mind you, before I go on, I am the youngest of three boys, and my oldest brother, who's six years my senior, he had some head issues like coming up, and he's been institutionalized for many years because, you know, back in like the 70s, 80s, my parents at least weren't really equipped or had the resources to really get down to the bottom of a solid, correct diagnosis for him. So they basically, you know, medicated him and listened to psychiatrists and doctors. Long and short is he's been away for a long time. Now, when me coming up, so knowing that I wasn't great in school, but knowing I wasn't stupid, but, you know, I was placed in a narrative by my parents in the framework of my oldest brother, and they judged me on that. They would be looking for signs that, you know, always has that thing again. See, it runs in our family and so forth. So knowing that wasn't me, you know, I had to go off on my own and do things that made me happy, and knowing that my parents just at one point just washed their hands of me, you know, meaning that, you know, he has that thing, you know where this goes, and, you know.
Which parent wrote you off, the one that hurt the most?
Specifically my mom, you know.
Imagine that. Imagine that right this minute, Ivan, if you don't mind.
No,
imagine
not
if your mom could hear you telepathically through the radio right this minute.
Right.
And imagine if now you could say to her what you would have wished she would have done. Could you express it directly to her now?
Oh, absolutely.
Go ahead, do it now.
I'd say, Mom, you know, you made me feel really alone and worth less than what I actually was, and you had zero faith in me. You know, you didn't want to work with me to get past these problems, and I know at the time you really didn't know better, and I can't fault you for that, but the effects of how you treated me or even neglected me that way still linger, and I'm trying my best to get past it, you know?
So take a step back in time to when it was happening as a child, and instead of just going along with being corrected and being damaged, what would you have said you needed from her?
I just need your love and understanding.
Okay, stop there, right there. Stop right there. Say it to her.
Mom, I just need your love, understanding, and patience, and perseverance to work with me through this problem.
Yeah, you sound very adult when you're saying that.
Yeah, I mean, I remember being a kid saying that to myself then.
Yeah, saying it to yourself, but not saying
it to my mom then. As many ways as I tried to express to her accurately how
I
felt.
Very hard.
You know, it just did not compute with her, you know, did not register. You know, unfortunately, she's had some issues, mental issues, and she's in a really bad place right now, and she's totally dependent on my father, which is a terrible thing, but, you know, it is what it is. You know, I mean, I can't, pour myself into her wanting to help her at the cost of my own peace of mind.
Sure, but Linda, what steps?
I hear you, Ivan. I hear you. And I'm sending you a great big hug.
I thank you.
You know, because Ivan, that's really all that we need. We need to be able to look at that inner child, be able to understand that child, and have compassion for mom, and be able to understand. And being understanding and being in touch with that, Ivan, you would allow whatever it is that you're holding on to, mom, to let go. And then be free to, again, accept the hug that I'm sending you and holding you real close to have you feel safe.
I thank you. That's very comforting.
Ivan, do you allow anybody that close?
Yeah. You know, my wife knows all about, my history and the history of my place in my family, and she's helped a lot. She is a registered nurse, and she's wise on many different subjects regarding those things, and we're working together to, you know, so I can be the best father and husband and I can be, and still maintaining the kid inside who's always bubbly and wanting to express himself.
So if you have a child who has trouble paying attention, how are you going to treat that child?
I will be, well, first of all, I'll be patient and loving. You know, and we'll find our answers together. You know, I may not have all the answers, but I'll be able to call out to whatever resources necessary to get the answers and work toward being in a healthier place that's functional in a family and in society.
Well, let me ask Linda. Linda, when you had that, and you had that especially with your children, what did you do? Where did you pull up the energy from to say, I need to be patient when they're driving you crazy?
Yes, Ivan.
You have four children, you know, that you're keeping going, right? And they're all close in age to each other.
Yes, they're all 2 years apart. And Ivan, all I could say is that I hear that wild, beautiful child inside of you, enthusiastic and longing to be that patient person who you are. And you will find that wonderful spirit in you to be able to not only pull yourself up, but to also attached to your children, to connect not only to your wife but to your children around you in a loving way. So I can only say for myself that my childhood, where I was not medicated, I was not diagnosed, I came through time, and I did struggle with my ADHD for many, many years, but it was a gift when I had children. I was able to spot it and say, oh my. So I was able to use that patience, that longing, that feeling of disconnect and being lost, to really be able to look at my child and say, yes, we will get through this together. So, and then we can forgive those around us who weren't able to see that, because they didn't have it. They didn't have that we have. So, you know, treasure that wildness in you. It's alive and well, and it's a beautiful spirit.
Yes, it is, and that's what I do in my adulthood, is to look at that trial and turmoil in my childhood and past as a gift. At the time, it didn't feel like that, but right now, being mature and being studied, you know, on these topics, you know, I could look back and then say, yeah, it made me better.
Thank you for calling in, Ivan. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor.
Sure.
Thanks, everybody.
Well, quite a thing, huh? So it continues. People suffer with this, and I think we have to take it even further. Understanding, compassion, being able to see the speed that someone moves at. You know, if you see that they're that fast, maybe you just got to slow it down. Here's one of the ways I found of dealing with somebody who's got an ADHD. If they come to you and they're speeding up real fast, so they're talking a mile a minute. You could do this with me, Ben. You could be talking with me, and let's say that you're... we're just going real fast, and you're telling me a story about what happened on the bus. Go ahead, tell me about your distress on the bus.
So I was on the bus today, and there was this guy. He gets on the bus, and he's got this look in
his
eyes.
Wait a minute, let me understand. You were on the bus today?
Yeah.
Wow, and there was somebody on the bus?
Yeah, this guy, he just got
okay,
on the bus.
Tell me about him, tell me.
Yeah, he had this look in his eyes. Like,
what kind of look did he have?
I don't even know. It was just,
was he wild?
A maniac look in his eyes.
And what did you feel on the inside?
I just wasn't sure what he was going to do.
So
you know?
Now that he's not here, do you feel any different?
Come to think of it, I do.
Yeah. Because that was really scary back there on the bus.
It was.
But it's not so scary now, is it?
No.
Yeah, okay, it's good to know that that stuff goes away. Now, what I just demonstrated to you was a form of hypnosis. What I did was I took your pace, the pace of your speech, and I mimicked it. And then I talked as fast as you talked and interrupted your speech, but I did not take you off track. And then I just kept reducing my voice and reducing my voice and reducing my voice, and you followed right along with me. Because you were being heard. So that's one of the things that we could do when we're with somebody who's speeding at a mile a minute. Join them. We unfortunately have to be going because time is up. But we will be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m. My friends, don't forget this Sunday. What's happening this Sunday, Linda?
It's a march. It's a trying to think of what it's actually called.
Okay,
the
The march,
and it's going to be a Columbus Circle on
WBAI, folks, are gathering together.
Sunday, it's a climate change.
9 o'clock, climate change.
Climate change. Thank you. Yes.
And we're going to try to be there if we can
on Sunday morning.
You're going to be there.
Seen the ads all over the subway with the submerged Statue of Liberty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be a big thing here in the city. We will be back with you Tuesday at 1 p.m. Special thanks to you all. Bye bye for now.
And make sure to go to thepositivemind.com and listen to our archives there. We have shows from every single day on there, going back thousands and thousands of shows.
Thousands and thousands of shows.
Yes, we do.
Millions and millions.
Millions and millions.
Millions of shows. We'll be back with you. Send me an email. Let me know what you think about this. Write as fast as you can.
Mama was queen of the mambo, Papa was king of the Congo. Deep down in the jungle, I stopped banging mother's bongo. Every monkey like to be in my place instead of me, 'cause I'm the king of bongo, baby, I'm the king of bongo bong. I went to the big town where there is a lot of sound, from the jungle to the city, looking for a bigger crowd. So I play my bongo for the people of big city. They don't go crazy when I'm banging on my boogie. I'm